cause poverty, oppression, and a degraded earth, and to create a model for successfully promoting and ensuring U.S. constitutional government in a local community. To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. As a listener of tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show, you have exclusive access to our online audience participation center at freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Here are just some of the value-added features you'll get by logging on while you're tuned in. Get free access to the research and articles that have contributed to tonight's show. See an important multimedia presentation titled The Philosophy of Liberty. Email the host with your comments. Get special discounts on featured books like the ever-popular Pocket Constitution. Register to receive a free subscription to AdvancedBulletin.net, which provides commentary and analysis on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. So get more! Log on while you're tuned in and advance freedom at freedom21santacruz.net/radio.
Welcome back. We're talking with Peyton Knight from the American Policy Center on the Endangered Species Act. What are some of the other things you're working on right now?
Well, we're working on that. That's taken up a lot of time because it's a massive battle. The other important note is that it should be clear to everyone that this bill reauthorizes the act and, in a sense, basically condones it and re-ups it for another fairly lengthy period of time, 10 or 15 years,
wow.
I'm not sure. So not only are you making it worse, but you're absolutely removing any possibility of any meaningful reform or repealing the act like it should be, like this should be done, for the next half to generate full generation. So that's the other danger there.
Well, how do you think it's going?
I think it's so far so... okay. I'm not terribly optimistic right now that Congressman Pombo is going to come back with something worthwhile, but that remains to be seen, and I hope I'm wrong.
What about the notion that it'll sunset or just go away?
It actually sunsetted over a decade ago.
Huh.
It's actually, the act has been expired. Every year when Congress passes appropriations, it's just re-upped for one more year at a time. That's the way it's been going for the past decade or so. So it actually did sunset and expire. And
I don't think that's very well known.
And that tells you something about sunsets, right?
Right.
When Congress says, oh, yeah, this is just going to be for 5 years and then it'll sunset. Well, it can go on in perpetuity forever if they want it to. So.
Well, talk about your work. I mean, do you think there's a chance that it'll ever go away?
I do, actually. I think we're starting to reach a tipping point here in America, if I can be so bold as to make that statement.
Oh, please be bold.
I think that in light of the dreadful, Kelo versus New London ruling by the Supreme Court, people are starting to understand that property rights are in danger. People who didn't even understand what property rights were, 6 months ago. So it's kind of galvanized this idea that property rights are sacred, and hey, maybe we should be watching this and doing something about this. It's become more of a mainstream issue, and that helps property rights advocates, environmentalists, and the folks who just absolutely abhor property rights, I've always feared that anyone would remember that we're supposed to have these rights. So now that more people do, I think it's actually helped.
Well, real quick, just in case somebody's flipping on the radio and happen to stop and listen to this, what was the Kelo deal?
That was where the town of New London, Connecticut, the government of New London, Connecticut, basically took people's homes in order to transfer that property to a wealthy developer who promised to put office buildings on there and bring in revenue for the government. So essentially it said, if I promise the government that I will produce more tax dollars with this property than the homeowner currently residing there, then the government apparently has the right to come in and force that homeowner out of his home, demolish his home, and hand it over to the person who promises to bring in more bucks for the government. It's an absolute, it's a travesty.
And the Supreme Court backed it.
And the Supreme Court backed it 5-4. Never thought that would happen. I don't think a lot of people ever thought that could happen. It's so incredibly wrong, incredibly abusive, and incredibly unconstitutional. Really at a loss for words for it. The one thing it did do, though, is it pretty much woke up the nation, I think. And people are now concerned that, wow, nobody's property is safe. If government can just take somebody's property because somebody else and give it to somebody else who promises to bring in more tax dollars, then, well, anybody's home is in danger.
Anybody, anywhere.
Yeah, of course, because any office building or office complex or strip mall or anything is going to bring in more wealth to the government than my single-family home. So that's pretty much, and that's exactly what the ruling was. In fact, Justice O'Connor, in her dissent, said that. So she used an analogy saying, so basically, the Ritz-Carlton can go up to a Motel 6 and say, hey, we can bring in more money on your property than your crummy little motel is carrying on. So we're going to go to the government, have them kick you off this property, and then we're going to build our hotel here, even though you formerly owned it. So, I think that has had a tremendous impact, at least so far, and hopefully people won't forget it anytime soon.
And what can the American people do?
Well, in terms of eminent domain abuse, which is what that ruling was all about, they need to go to their state legislatures and work to strengthen laws that prevent this sort of abuse, because that is the one thing that can be done. The Supreme Court ruling was a Supreme Court ruling. It left open, in a specific instance, it absolutely sold out the property owners. It did say that states and localities are free to use eminent domain however they want and pass laws that limit the power of eminent domain if they want to. So now the American people need to go to their towns, localities, and states and say, and get their legislators to absolutely limit the power of eminent domain.
And on endangered species?
Well, the best thing people can do there is call their congressman and say, repeal the Endangered Species Act. Absolutely repeal it. It has run roughshod over property owners, destroyed economies, destroyed lives, it's cost people jobs, it's cost people their livelihoods, and it hasn't saved species. So what's the point anymore? It's time to repeal the Endangered Species Act.
All right, and if anybody wants information, there's plenty on Freedom21SantaCruz.net and www.AmericanPolicy.org. And Peyton, I want to thank you for staying up late and
absolutely
and being with us tonight.
Hey, I really appreciate the opportunity. Thanks.
All right, keep up the good work.
I will. You too.
All right, thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, next up is Jeannie Soderman. We're going to talk a little water right now. Jeannie, you there?
Yes. Good evening.
How are you?
Well, I'm just dandy. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Working away as usual, I'm sure.
Yes.
Jeannie, real quick, give us, I know you've been involved in water issues and educating people about sustainable development. For someone who might have not heard about your background. Give us a quick 30 seconds or so on how you got involved in this.
Oh, about 10 years ago, I was a member of World Wildlife Fund, Nature Conservancy, and Greenpeace, and very dedicated. I'm a lover of the earth, the animals, the trees, and I heard this guy on Radio Liberty, and he sounded a little bit off and kind of weird, but I thought, well, there's a grain of truth in what he's saying, and that was Dr. Stan Monteith. And I kept listening to him, and I got very interested because I felt something was wrong in the environmental movement. And as I researched, I found out that at the very top of all these environmental groups, they had been taken over by the very rich and the very powerful. And I finally decided not anymore were they going to manipulate me and my emotions.
Hold on just a second. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking with Jeannie Soderman. Go ahead, Jeannie.
And I decided that the environmental groups were not going to be manipulating me anymore. So I quit World Wildlife Fund, Nature Conservancy, and Greenpeace, and started on a voyage over 10 years. And it's just been amazing because the more I find out, the more it's real that there is a plan to control every living thing on the earth, and even the rivers, the rocks, everything that you see, you hear, you feel will be controlled. And one of those is water. And I know your guest before was talking about land use, and water goes right along with land use, growing crops and anything you do with water. And so I would like to first of all go into the World Bank water policy and bring it down to local, because locally now here in Santa Cruz and throughout the world, it's not just in the United States, they are building the infrastructure for regional government. And the only way we can get to world government is to first have regional government, and then it's called mission creep. We go into world government.
Before you continue, though, because I know some of the things that you're going to talk about, people will go, you know, that's just, you know, not possible, and that really can't be happening. But, I mean, there are places that you can go to read from the people who you're going to be talking about exactly what it is that they want to do.
Well, if you go to the international meetings, it's so important to understand international. If you do not understand international, you will not understand local. And that's where the World Bank water policy is so important, because it ties right into any county water policy that is now being formulated. And I always like to give references so people can go and check it out themselves. The website for World Bank is very easy. It's www.worldbank.org. There is one document you need to go and click in and put in the number 12335. Again, 12335 is the document number. That was written in 1993, and it's called Water Resources Management. And this is the blueprint that all of the United States, national and county, are now following. Now, in Santa Cruz County, it's actually coming from a ballot measure that was passed in 1990. It was Measure C, the Decade of the Environment. And they had it only for 10 years, till the year 2000. And the Board of Supervisors said, well, we have two options. Either we can readopt the measure, or we can put it on the ballot again and let the voters vote. Well, it was getting a kind of a bad name, and people were getting actually educated what Measure C and local agenda was. And so the Board of Supervisors readopted the measure for another 10 years. And these are the critical years coming up, because all throughout the United States, the World Bank water policy, which is part of Local Agenda 21, the fresh water chapter, that will be implemented into all the county and city general plans. Once you have it codified in the county and city general plans, then you're going to have a hard time backpedaling to get it out of the law.
Give us an example of how the World Bank policy goes into effect locally.
Okay, this is interesting, because in the World Bank water policy, and it's actually, they also name it water resources management. Very important to know that term, because in Santa Cruz County, you can actually get it off of the internet, and as I understand, freedom21santacruz.net has that on the internet, and also on the county website, Santa Cruz website. It's called Strategy for County of Santa Cruz Water Resources Management. Now, correlating that with the World Bank water policy, they are going to bring at least three counties together for regional water management. And here in the World Bank water policy, it says on pages 28 and 71, I'm going to say the pages so you know I've studied this, that the World Bank plans to have control by replacing all country and state county political boundaries with geographical river basin boundaries. And here in Santa Cruz County, they're looking at a regional water resource plan, and they plan to bring in Santa Cruz, Monterey, and further south, San Benito, and they might bring in a couple other counties. But here again, this correlates with the World Bank water policy. We will actually erase the boundaries of the counties and bring them into this regional water plan. And boundaries of the regional water plan will be boundaries of the geographical river basin. So you're actually looking at a whole new political system.
Why do you think it's important for them to blur the boundaries?
Well, that's what our Constitution was. We are sovereign states, and the county is a political subdivision of the state, and they are to go by the state constitution. So if they blur the boundaries, they're actually blurring the constitution. And you know, the courts are so crooked now. When you have crooked courts, there is no law. So they are actually making their own law, county and state. A lot of the mandates that the county is getting now are coming from the bills passed in the state legislature. And, of course, the state has MOUs, memos of understanding, with our U.S. government. And so they have agreements to implement Agenda 21 in the World Bank water policy, our state legislature. And of course, who has voted for this? I was looking at certain bills. It was Bruce McPherson, who is now the Secretary of State of California. And of course, Fred Keeley, who was in the Assembly and Senate, and he wants to run for U.S. Congress now. And so we have a lot of people in the government that truly understand, Roy, what's happening and what bills they need to pass on to the people of the state.
You know, you are really well informed. Where can people keep up on these kinds of things?
Well, there's three websites I really like. And one, of course, is www.freedom21santacruz.net. That's your website, Roy. Freedom21santacruz.net. Another one is www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. The third one is Michael Kaufman, and he has done so much regarding private property. And that website is www.discerningtoday.org, and that is discerningtoday.org. Those three websites are good, besides the worldbank.org website.
Now, you know, we were talking about blurring the boundaries and, you know, where the attempt to regionalize the water control folks. Are those people elected people that are going to run this show?
Well, right now they have regional agencies, and they make it appear like they're sanctioned by the elected officials. Say there might be a couple from your local city council, or you might have a couple from the Board of Supervisors or commissioners, whatever you call in your area. But they're starting to put into these councils non-elected. In the future, there will be no one elected to these councils. Now, right now in Santa Cruz County, the main force by this regionalizing water is unelected agency. It's called the Environmental Health Agency. And I have been told by one of the members, John Ricker, it was at a water advisory committee, and I always sit in as the public to see what's happening. And for no reason at all, I think it was Zigo, he turned around to me and he says, "Jeannie, we are going to have metering." And I thought, well, I wonder why he's telling me this. Well, I think he's probably thinking, well, it's your waste of time being here at this meeting. We are going to have what we want. Now, metering is super important.
Why is that?
They've got to realize, understand how much water is being used by each private water well owner. That is so important, because they have to look at the basin, how much total water is in the basin. And they're looking at what they call sustainable yield. Now, that's arbitrary. You wonder who makes these figures up of how much water that you can take out of the ground. So what they're doing, they're actually trying to merge surface water and groundwater. It's called conjunctive use. And there are laws that are going to be on the books in the state legislature regarding mingling the surface and the groundwater. And that's where they'll actually go after the private well owners. There's another thing they're going after. They're going after pollution. And this is another nose underneath the tent. In this draft of this regional water plan for Santa Cruz County, they want volunteers to go on private property and see if there's pollution around the wellhead. Well, you might have cows or horses, or you might be growing crops, and they're going to be making stipulations how near that pollution should be near the wellhead. And so here it comes, all these rules and regulations on private property. But they actually want volunteers to come on your private property, which is horrendous.
And you're speaking of Santa Cruz County, but this is going to be implemented throughout the nation.
Everywhere, throughout the world. It's very prevalent now in the United States. And there are specific code words. When you go to a water meeting, it could be a water district, they have like demand management. Whenever you hear demand management, there's three parts to that. They're going to price the water so high that they are going to enforce low water usage. Number two, they're going to have water rationing. And you won't be able to use too much water, or you're really going to pay through the nose. And number three, they're going to have water restrictions on specific usage of water. Say if you're an agricultural user, then that's really valued as low value, and that will be the highest price. And so we're looking at land use and water go together. What concerns me here locally, and other areas of the United States are implementing it also, is they're trying to take over the county, is trying to do eminent domain over a private water company. Now, in Santa Cruz Mountains, we have a city or a little town called Felton. There's not many people up there. And who controls the water, distributes the water? It's a German company. But in California, it's called California American. And they now have a distribution of water in Felton. The people in Felton just voted on a ballot that they were going to take over and pay, it was $11 million bond to take over this foreign-owned water company. This is extremely dangerous because the people have been told by FLO, which is called Friends for Locally Owned Water, they are very tied in with a radical environmental group called Public Citizen.
Well, I've heard it. Anytime you hear the word friends, pay attention.
Yes. And that's Ralph Nader's group. I've seen these people at the State of the World Forum in the International Conference in New York. And they are radical. And being a former member of these radical groups, it's just that they're manipulating our emotions. And they're telling the people in Felton, you should own your water and not pay into the profits of a corporation. Well, what happens is, if you look at all these agreements between Felton, San Lorenzo Valley Water District, and the county, the Felton customers do not own the water. It is the county in collusion with the San Lorenzo Valley Water District. And so what they're doing is the county will lose a tax base from the private corporation, CalAmerican, and the people of Felton will actually have a bond debt over 30 years. It goes up to $30 million. So here again, they don't own it. They're actually, the county really controls everything.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk about how your water is being controlled right after this. Welcome back. We're talking with Jeannie Soderman about how your water is being taken away from you. You know, there was another thing, and I forgot who it was that was talking about on one of our shows, but when they had that big environmental conference in San Francisco a few months ago, that several of the mayors from around the country were there, and they all pledged to reduce water consumption by some ridiculous number, and where each individual was only going to be allowed to use a certain amount of water a day, which was way less than what we really need.
Well, in the International Agenda 21, you'll actually see it stipulated that per person per day, it's 10.5 gallons. And I believe this is part of the tiered system where anyone over 10.5 gallons will be priced very, very high.
Right.
It's interesting. I went to another water conference in San Francisco. And now, they're equally bad. The Cal American and the Eminent Domain of Cal American, they're both bad. But the Eminent Domain is actually worse because it puts a property tax, like up in Felton, $700 to $900 a year on that private property parcel. See, this is what they're after. They're after the private property in the mountains because the mountains are classified as a Ventana's wildlands locally.
Mm-hmm.
They want the people out of the mountains so they cannot afford to live in the mountains. And they have already a plan, the Wildlands Project, to bring in bears, black bears, locally. And we already have mountain lions have come down actually to the ocean and have killed our domestic animals. But going back to this San Francisco conference, it was very interesting because it was huge. And they had a workshop on the value of water. The World Health Organization has already said water is a commodity. It's an economic good, which the World Bank water policy also states. But they were saying at this workshop, now how can we get the value up so people will pay more? And they said, well, people just really don't understand. We're going to have to change the mindset of the people to really show them how valuable water is. And one of the items, which was very interesting
Hold up just a second. I don't want to lose you. We'll take a quick break. We'll come right back and pick that up. Welcome back. We're talking with Jeannie Soderman on the manipulation and inflation of your water. Pay attention. This woman knows what she's talking about. Go ahead, Jeannie.
And one of the things I talked about at the Value of Water workshop is water had to become a sacred entity. It had to have a sacred value. Now, that to me ties right into the Biodiversity Assessment Report, which was written in 1995, an extremely valuable and interesting document. In fact, Radio Liberty has that in their sustainable development syllabus. But this Biodiversity Assessment Report came out of the Biodiversity Treaty that was actually in 1992 at the Earth Summit 2, it was displayed that they wanted this particular biodiversity treaty, which it didn't pass Senate, but they are implementing it now. Now, in the Biodiversity Assessment Report, it does say the rivers are your mothers, the pools and the springs are sacred, you have sacred groves of trees, so this is where your paganism comes in. And if you give nature a sacred value, then it becomes more valuable. And you have to pay more in case you take water, well, you're going to pay to replace it. And so this ties right in with all the documents of the United Nations.
Well, and it appears as though, I mean, wherever you go, you hear on TV, on radio, paid for by the water agencies, there's a water shortage. You know, you got to consider. You got to say there's a water shortage, or it's coming.
Oh yes, the crisis is coming. Do you realize I just talked to one of the top hydrologists in California, and I says, how many critical drought years are there in a 100-year period? And he said, well, as I remember, there's only 3 or 4 years in a 100-year period, and this is important because everything that I've studied, all the documents I have researched, in the end, humans will not have fresh water. It will be the fish, the animals. We will get desalination. That's what they're pushing right now. It's going to be very expensive.
And recycled.
Water. And recycling. And, of course, catching the rainwater. That's what we humans will get. And in the biodiversity assessment report, it correlates that to land use is not sustainable if the humans benefit from it. Isn't that amazing? Land use is not supposed to benefit humans. It's just amazing to me.
It is. And, you know, you hear, I attended a water conference in Southern California a couple of years ago, and you hear them talking about, you know, we have to figure a way to convince the public that recycled water is a good thing to drink and to use for cooking, and that we don't want them to think of it as, you know, toilet water.
Well, they say at these conferences, water is underappreciated. And how do we get the public to appreciate water? And I have a quote here, just looking at my notes in that big San Francisco water meeting. It's the demand curve that reflects price. And the demand curve is what we talked about, is demand management. And that's what's coming down the pike, is restrictions on water and higher water costs, mainly because of desalination and our ability not to use our groundwater. By the way, they plan to shut off all the private water wells.
Wow.
And through grants, pay the private water well owners money to shut down their wells.
To give up their rights.
Yeah. It's through contracts, Roy.
We got a little bit of time left before we take another break. What can people do?
The people must understand the World Bank water policy and tie that into local. There are two groups you must monitor. The Water Advisory Committee of the County and Environmental Health.
Oh, we've got to go, Jeannie.
Okay.
The views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom. Policies, procedures, and laws enacted by local government and non-government organizations in the name of diversity, community, and Earth are diminishing individual liberty, degrading ecology, and threatening human life and happiness in towns across the nation. You've likely already experienced some of the consequences of policies that are approaching full implementation, with little public discourse or voter input. Have you experienced any of the following? restricted freedom of mobility as you sit for hours in gridlock traffic, mounting limitations on or even loss of your private property, an engineered housing crisis that you're being told must be solved with your money by those who caused it, loss of parental authority to a government education system that seems to emphasize social indoctrination over education, transitioning of water resources to regional control by non-elected bureaucrats with subsequent engineered shortages, heavy influence of international and non-government organizations over local policy at the expense of representative democracy. You're not alone in recognizing these and other symptoms of our diminishing freedoms. The adverse consequences of collectivist policies and laws enacted by local government bodies are affecting almost every citizen in your town. Many have noticed and are ready to act to advance individual liberty, family autonomy, a vibrant ecology, and a strong economy. They're doing this by turning their individual initiative into local action for national impact. To find out how you can join others to advance freedom, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. That's freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. You might be wondering if Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a liberal or a conservative organization. Are they left or right, Republican or Democrat? But you'll find that none of these one-dimensional labels applies to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, nor to many of its participants. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz dialogue doesn't take place in a left-right, liberal-conservative dialectic, but on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. Constitutional Republic. To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Welcome back to Freedom21SantaCruz.net. You know, that always happens to me when I talk to Jeannie. We were going and going, and I missed a time, and then she went away. But if you want more information on what you can do, you can always, again, check out Freedom21SantaCruz.net and get a lot of information. Coming up next, we have a program with Joan Perros that will be very informative. She's been all over the world to these conferences as well, so take a listen and learn.
In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Welcome and good evening. This is Joan Perros. I'm your host this evening on Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio. And our guest this hour is Joan Vian. Joan is about to leave on her 65th international conference, and there's nobody that understands the global agenda the way Joan Vian does. So Joan, welcome, and thank you for being with us at this really, really late hour.
Well, Joan, I wouldn't miss the opportunity of doing a radio program with you for the love of money. Joan and I have traveled a number of global meetings together, and I don't know, I never thought I'd be able to find a woman that's cut from the same piece of cloth that I am. It's almost scary how we think.
Well, it is a lot of fun, and you know, and the kind of things that we're involved with, that we see, that we're around, can be a little overwhelming, it can be a little frightening, but you get to the point where you go, I've got to have some fun with this, even though it is really deadly, deadly serious. It's life and death, but I guess even coroners find a way to deal with their work, right?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, that's a great analogy. Before we begin, I would like to just give a little bit of background for people who may not have heard me before. I'm a businesswoman. I manage money. 10 years ago, I went to my first international conference out of ignorance, and I was confronted with world government. There's no other way to discuss what I saw, what I heard, and what I experienced. I came home with a suitcase full of material, determined to figure out how big, how vast, how deep, how broad, how far advanced was the agenda, and I couldn't find the bottom. It just goes on and on and on and on, and every time I thought I understood something, there was a whole galaxy of information and agenda behind that piece of information that I thought I understood. I have spent 10 years, I have sacrificed the building of my investment business in order to understand a very evil Orwellian agenda that is looking to choke you and I, take our freedom to believe, our freedom to become, our freedom to determine where we will live, how we will live, and what we will do, what we will teach our children. And people, there are people who, when I explain this, like my friends or my relatives or my neighbors or you know, even a pastor at a church, you know, their eyes get as big as a saucer, and it's like, oh, lady, please, oh, dear, oh, my, got a real weirdo on the hands, you know? And not, no way. I have covered 64 global conferences. I've interviewed presidents, prime ministers. I could go on and on about everybody I've talked to and interviewed, the documents that I have in my possession. 95% of them are filed. The bottom line is I know what I'm talking about. As such, I have a nonprofit, the Women's International Media Group, that helps fund our organization. I write 2 newsletters. I've written 2 books. Please, you need to get a hold of my material. If nothing else, but to educate yourself, it's well worth the price of the books. And I'm having a half price sale, 2 for 1. You can get a copy of Prince Charles, and you get a copy of Global Straitjacket. Can I tell them the price?
No, because we're on nonprofit radio.
Anyway, it's half price. Includes shipping and handling. It's half price. So call 301-371-0541, 301-371-0541, and
we'll be back in just a second.
You might be wondering if Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a liberal or a conservative organization. Are they left or right, Republican or Democrat? But you'll find that none of these one-dimensional labels applies to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, nor to many of its participants. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz dialogue doesn't take place in a left-right, liberal-conservative dialect.
And one of the things that is called for in that document about police and providing those is that it calls in paragraph 124 that every member state of the United Nations needs to designate a single point of contact within their governmental structures to be responsible for coordinating and managing the provision of police personnel to United States peace operations. Well, single point of contact. You know, Joan, that was before 9/11, and I thought, well, what is that? I'm not sure. And then after 9/11, we got the whole Department of Homeland Security, the Schutzstaffel, the SS, and so it just demonstrated to me how these things are already designed.
There's a major blueprint.
Right.
You know, I am a registered Republican, and this agenda that we're talking about knows no political party. They're both involved.
Right.
And let me just say, with regard to political parties and bipartisanship, I long ago determined that we are in a parliamentarian form of government, which is like the type of structure Britain has. and all of the Commonwealth countries. And let me just mention for a minute that in a Commonwealth, in a parliamentarian form of government, there is no opposition, right?
Ah,
whatever
okay.
party is in,
uh-huh.
okay, everybody from the prime minister already all the way down to the local Yahoo that's elected is of the same, you know, party.
So what you're saying is we had no choice in the election.
Right, okay? I mean, you know,
yeah, I wish people would get over it.
There's no philosophical difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. And I remember the first global meeting after Bush was elected was the Millennium Financing for Development Conference that you and I went to in Monterrey, Mexico.
FFD.
And what I was so shocked at, I was expecting George Bush to do something different, to make some kind of stand against the whole global.
And the only one that did was O'Neill, and you know what happened to him.
That's right. O'Neill's the only one who did it. God bless that man. He has my respect.
Right.
And he's now gone because he didn't fit the mold as to what George Bush is really doing. My whole point is this, that, hey, people better wake up. It's not Republican versus Democrat. It's nationalist versus globalist. And when we get into this report, they're going to see that... we have been inching, inch by inch, towards a global military state. And to use Kofi Annan, or to use the report, on December 2nd, the United Nations issued a very important report that pushes the envelope 10 steps in the future, in which they are calling for a complete empowerment of the United Nations that goes far beyond anything that we've seen, in which basically the United Nations will have their own military and their own corps of police officers that can be sent anywhere in the world.
And I think for the listeners, Joan, you're saying that it's the globalists against the nationalists. We're speaking of this agenda in political, physical terms. There's a whole other aspect to this agenda embodied in the Earth Charter, which is spiritual. So I don't want the listeners to forget that there's this whole spiritual foundation, but we're simply, when you say that, you're just, because we're talking right now in political terms.
That's correct. Let's just clarify that the spiritual that we're talking about is not Christianity. All right?
Or the Judeo-Christian ethic. You know, and it's interesting that this Global Biodiversity Assessment Report, that almost 1,000 pages, or what is it, 1,200 pages?
Yeah.
1,000?
Uh-huh.
When you go to the back of it, Joan, uh-huh. it talks about the Christian, it talks about the Jews, it talks about the Muslims, and it talks about how they have to be done away with. And I feel like I might be getting off track here a little bit, but to understand this whole war in the Middle East, there was an interview that General Abizaid gave to a journalist with the Washington Post, and Abizaid was... you know, talking about the Islamic world and talking about how there won't be success there in a sudden way, but it'll just be incremental, and it's going to be done through a process of modernization of the Islamic world. So he's not talking about Middle East, he's talking about Islam, and that it's gradually going to find its own accommodation with a global economy and open political systems. So it, through the process of globalization of their economy and their political systems, then the Islamic world will be slid into this whole new world order.
Let me rephrase what you're saying. In the to use the terms found in this new report on the reform of the UN, it says, quote, the UN should take a leading role to promote a comprehensive strategy against terrorism, which includes efforts to counter extremism and intolerance, education and fostering public debate.
Right, right.
So,
and they're talking about people that adhere to their religious beliefs.
That's right. That's right. I think it's extremely important, going back to this report. First of all, in everything we're talking about, there is a spiritual aspect. In my opinion, it is good against evil. And really, all of this we are in a major, major battle. The battle's not really in Iraq. The battle is right in our own backyard with sustainable development and all the things that the announcement talking about the organization very, very well said. You know, I couldn't have said it better, just very brilliantly said, you know, that things are being taken from us. You know, they are engineering shortages in order to recreate an agenda. And that's exactly what I see. Let me tell you, let me cut to the quick of everything we're going to talk about. This report was issued December 2nd. On December 26th, the tsunami occurred in, everybody knows where it occurred, the South Seas. And as a result of understanding what this UN report calls for, I immediately, in my own heart and mind, said, wait a minute, the tsunami was engineered. And I believe that it was engineered. I can't prove it. Okay, and I have some emails that basically give credence to my gut reaction, because what this report does is it calls for a common security to collective security. Now, let's talk for a moment about common security. When we what's been on the agenda for a while, what the United Nations does is they call together a group or a commission of important or inner circle people. And those people then come up with what they think, or, you know, anyway, wherever it comes from, and they set four posts to go. And there have been a number of reports and commissions. I'm just going to mention a few. The Limits to Growth, the North-South, Common Security, a Blueprint for Survival, Toward an Unlimited Future, Our Common Future, an Agenda for Peace, Our Global Neighborhood, it goes on ad nauseum. And early on in the North-South, a program for survival headed up by Willy Brandt, who at one time was Prime Minister of Germany, he basically, they talk about the commonness between the world. And we'll get into some of the people and how you find them all throughout all these different reports. There's just a couple key people, but then there's others that are just as important, but there are a few that, you know, have been serving on all these commissions. And what I have seen as I went through a number of these reports, because I wanted to compare them to the reform of the United Nations, is I saw that we went from a thing where the UN should be concerned about, you know, keeping peace in the world, even having some troops here and there, to collective security. And security is extremely evil. It's just extremely Orwellian, heinous, because what they say is all the countries are interconnected. Actually, there's no difference between us, is what they're saying, and that now need to act together collectively when there are economic and social threats. That includes poverty, HIV, AIDS, environmental degradation. When there's
anybody trying to transact business outside of the confines of the central banking system under the BIS,
yes,
okay. or trading, you know, diamonds, trying to sell,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
that's right. Okay, because everything we're talking about is control. When I talk about sustainable development, I basically tell people the bottom line is sustainable development is control. It's all about control, of you and I. Control of the natural assets, whether it is the diamonds or the gold or the titanium or the manganese or the rainwater, yes. Control to how you and I think.
Well, and you know what was so scary to me at the 2000 Millennium Summit? The way Kofi Annan explained this whole concept of security, he said that it was evolving because it to mean the defense of a territory from external attack. And that's how most of us think. If somebody's attacking our nation, that's security. But he said that it's evolving to mean protection of communities and individuals from internal violence. So if something is happening within my country, then the world as a mob is to respond to my country. That's scary.
Yeah. That is exactly what is being set down here in collective security, because it's interstate conflict, it's internal conflict, including it's genocide and other large-scale atrocities.
Yeah, but if it's genocide, how come the United Nations never steps in about and does anything about genocide?
Well, you see, they had to allow it to happen in order to say that they need collective security. And I find it fascinating when I think of Idi Amin. He was Uganda. Now, Uganda belonged to the Belgium, okay? I thought it was British, but, you know, the Brits got off on that one.
Uh-huh.
But the Brits were very much involved in slave trading. And so, you know, there's a lot of, you know, when I think about why did they allow Idi Amin, well, they say, well, every country has sovereignty. Now they're saying, no, sovereignty is changing, and we have to act on behalf of humankind. And interestingly enough, they make in this new idea of collective security, humanitarian reasons above all the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, well, gosh, if it's humanitarian, that means we can look at the Millennium Development Goals from 2000, in which they basically said the world now is responsible for reducing poverty by 50% by 2015, reducing poverty.
It's like using the environment as a central organizing principle, and they do it over and over again. When
right.
does the world wise up? Poverty, sure, that tugs on my heart. Disease.
Famine. Pestilence.
Yeah. Oh, okay. This time they're going to do it. But it's, it's always the same central organizing principle, but it's just a cover for, like you say, this whole global police state, this control over every aspect of our lives.
Oh, yeah. And so, you know, when I read this, I said, my goodness, this is the complete militarization of the world. Now, you know, some of these things have been around for a while. I can go to the report, Our Global Neighborhood, which was issued in 1995, with Sir Shridath Ramphal. He was one of the co-conveners of this commission that put out this report, Our Global Neighborhood. And I realize many of you don't understand what we're talking about, but if you order my newsletter on collective security, you'll be able to get the whole ball of wax and come up to speed with what it really means and how really dangerous this is. And Shridath Ramphal was from Guyana, which is in South America. Guyana is a British Commonwealth country. And Shridath Ramphal served as the president of the British Commonwealth for like, I don't have his length of term, but it was like, you know, 10, 15 years. And that was one of the reasons why he was knighted by the Queen. You always want to watch that as well. And Shridath throughout, you know, a number of these reports and commissions that he served on. You know, he goes back to the Brandt Commission on the North-South relations. You know, and so you see this common thread. And so they took the ideas and the concepts of the 80s, and by the time you got to 1995, all right, he's talking about the fact that we're at a new time, we need a new order in world affairs, a new style of managing our relations on this planet. You know, the world's people and their governments have no credible option but to work in partnership to maintain peace and order, expand economic activity, tackle pollution, check greenhouse warming, combat pandemic diseases, curb the spread of weapons, and on and on. So what do we have there? Well, they wanted, you know, the security, the Charter of the UN to be revised to allow the Security Council to authorize action within countries, but only if it was on humanitarian grounds. Well, interestingly enough, Henry Kissinger wrote a book called Does America Need a New Foreign Policy? And I believe that this is 2001, yes. And what does he say? He says, well, there's something as a state that doesn't put it all together and they become failed, and as such, for humanitarian reasons, the United Nations should transcend sovereignty in order to protect people, and that humanitarianism becomes above everything else in the world. So you fit that into how all these things and these ideas are evolving to the point where the UN wants a rapid deployment force, and in fact, in June at the Group of Eight meeting, the Bush administration announced the fact that there are now 75,000 peacekeepers that will keep peace in Africa. And when I asked if they could be deployed anywhere in the world, the spokesman from the Bush administration sheepishly said, yeah, they could be sent anywhere in the world. Well, I mean, we already have, the United Nations already has a rapid deployment force.
Sure. And again, going back to the Brahimi report that was written prior to the year 2000 for the
right.
Millennium Summit. And you know what's so devious, Joan, is...
Well, that's a good word, devious.
Devious. is they just bluntly state in the Brahimi report that... Oh, we just have a minute. Let me quickly. That they're asking for this doctrinal use, doctrinal shift in the use of civilian police in United Nations operations, and they don't want them called military or army. They want them called police because they say that the citizens will place fewer constraints on governments if they're called police because people have less resistance to civilian policing being used in military actions. That's just abominable. It's so twisted. But it goes back so far, and my producer says we have another minute and a half. So,
well, I want to ask you, are you reading from the direct report?
Exactly. I'm not making this up. This is paragraph.
No. Yep. I just want to know, because if you have something written up, I'd like you to fax it to me.
Okay.
But if you don't, tell me what page.
Brahimi report, and I can fax it to you. It's pages 20, 21, 22, but the better way, depending upon the format in which you download the Brahimi report, would be paragraphs 119, 120, 122, 3, and 4. And that sums up the whole issue of civilian policing.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, and you know, Joan, this has all been implemented in the United States through the Patriot Act and other legislation. One of the things that's fascinating when you had talked earlier about public-private partnerships is how the pharmaceutical companies are taken care of. And when I read that this is to combat disease and all of these new viral threats, the pharmaceuticals in the last page of that act are... We'll come back in just a second. This is Joan Parros, and I'm your host this evening with Freedom 21 Radio Santa Cruz, and our guest is global journalist, traveler, Joan Vian, who has been to 64 global conferences and is just a fascinating wealth of information. And Jonah's discussing tonight the centerpiece document on collective security that will be the topic of the five-year follow-up to the Millennium Summit at the UN later this year. And, you know, Joan, as I was looking at the executive summary of this, again, the United Nations frames the debate. And when you frame the debate, you control.
Yes.
You control it. And through consensus, exactly. And and disease is one of these organizing principles that tugs on our heart. And it's like, oh, yes, that would be a wonderful thing to take care of. But as you go to the financial meetings, and I know it's a different name now, Prince of Wales
International Business Leaders Forum.
International Business Leaders Forum, that has set up all these public-private partnerships whereby business exerts influence and control over the governmental mechanisms of the world. What you have are these oligopolies, and there's a website, Joan. It's www.etceteragroup.org, etcgroup.org, and it lists the top companies by size in the world, and they mention that of the 100 largest economic entities in the world, over half of those are transnational corporations.
Right.
And we've got pharmaceuticals at the very top. And when I read a UN document, I go, okay, how is this feeding corporate entities, the transnational corporations? And here you have on this agenda coming up, disease. And it always feeds into the money troughs of the oligopolies.
Oh, absolutely. Let me just mention something about, you brought up the public-private partnership and Prince Charles. I am going, depending on the snow out this way, either Saturday or Sunday, to Switzerland for the World Economic Forum. And this is a conference that brings together literally, all the major power brokers, the top 1,000 CEOs from major corporations from around the world, key people throughout the whole United infrastructure, key people from academia like Harvard and Princeton and Yale, key people, political figures from all over the world. Last year, I forget, the Bush administration had almost as many as Clinton did one year when he said that there was nobody home, that they were all in Davos. Well, anyway, this year, the Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum, along with Harvard or MIT, has put out a report in which they say public-private partnerships are here to stay, and they are the way to fund the money for the Millennium Development Goals. So you just see all of these things being built on like a huge, giant, to use the word, pyramid. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And they're feeding on one another. Some of the things, the thing that got me to cover global meetings over the years was the idea of global taxation. And that has been a major topic throughout all of the years. And global tax was put on the Group of Eight agenda, never before, in the 10 years, just this year, by Jacques Chirac, and it's now called a tax for the poor. And even this new report on reforming the UN, again, just like when we went to the Financing for Development Conference, that was all about global taxation, you know? And here it says, after years of debate on whether to develop innovative approaches to financing for development, such as, and it goes on to other things, but it does mention most of these reports that I talked about a minute ago all discuss a tax on airline tickets, flight lines, flight lanes, sea lanes, ocean fishing, electromagnetic spectrum, I don't know what that is, outer space. I mean, they're talking about all kinds of fees and levies and charges and, the Tobin tax, an international currency transaction. Well, Jacques Chirac said, hey, none of those things are going to work. The poor countries can't afford it. The rich countries can. And so he's coming up with a whole new, he and the Brits are coming up with a whole new set of ideas for global taxation that will be equitable to all.
So they have a formula, percentage. And Joan, this collective security document, it was interesting to me to see which foundations were named in the chairman's letter. and if I could just, list this is the usual suspects. It's the Carnegie Corporation, the Ford Foundation, the International Peace Academy, the MacArthur Foundation, a couple of universities, New York and Stanford, and the Rockefeller Brothers Fund and the Rockefeller Foundation, the Stanley Foundation, United Nations Foundation, and the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation. So these are simply arms. A foundation is a means, a legal means by which the filthy, filthy rich can preserve their wealth and then use it to mold and manipulate the world to achieve their goals, to further control the wealth of the world and preserve.
Oh, Joan, I'm sick and tired of you sounding like a communist.
I don't know what.
It's pretty scary when you and I sound like them, you know?
I know, but I'm just trying to explain it.
Yeah, no. Hey, you know what? When you look at the taxing of Americans, and I don't have a particular economic newsletter in front of me that I can read some of the figures, and this newsletter doesn't talk about what I'm going to mention, but when you add the fact that all these wealthy, wealthy individuals, the Rockefellers, I mean, you know, they're not paying any tax.
The tool.
It's all in the foundation.
The communism is the tool to implement fascism.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, my whole point is that all these foundations are for the filthy rich. It goes back to all the foundations, the Foundation Act, whatever it was called, passed in, I think, 1907. And by hiding all this money in the foundations, they've been able to not pay tax, not support our government, not support all the things that you and I are supporting, which means our taxes have gone up, while they're busy changing how we think, where we live, what we'll do. And now, through public-private partnership, now that America's gutted, they're now going to take control of our assets through local, county, state, and federal government through public-private partnership.
Well, and in years past, they've used that wealth, people like the Rothschilds and Ford and IG Farben, and they got behind and promoted Hitler. They overthrew the Tsar in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're really behind some really evil agendas, and they're just on their merry way, and it's just another attack.
It is an attack, and again, in the first hour, I talked about the fact that there's a small group of insiders, and you can see them. I mean, like Maurice Strong. Maurice Strong was the Secretary General of the first environmental conference held in Stockholm, the Secretary General of the second environmental conference held in Rio de Janeiro, the Earth Summit, Agenda 21, Sustainable Development. You and I met, oh my, that was quite incredible, in Brazil at the Rio Plus 5 follow-up meeting, and then you and I were at the World Summit for Sustainable Development in Johannesburg 2 years ago.
Right.
And Maurice Strong now, he wasn't there, but I've interviewed him about 6 or 7 times. He knows my face. And whenever he sees me, he's very nice. And I've done a lot of interviews with him. And by the way, for people who would like a copy, I've done 2 interviews with Maurice Strong, and they're audio tapes, and so you can call 301-371-0541 and order those audio tapes. You'll be real surprised.
Well, and you know, the hard part of hearing this information is just, you know, it's so incredible. It's too much to believe, and that's why I started going, because I had to see it for myself. And so sometimes you need a little bit of tangible evidence.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, that's, you know, when I go to these meetings, Joan, I am an eyewitness. People cannot say to me that I don't know what I'm talking about. I have gone there physically. I have the documents. I've done interviews. I mean, I can quote. It's not like I'm left to the Attila the Hun or whatever, or right or whatever it is. I mean, the point is, I was there. I have documentation. You cannot not believe what I am saying. I mean, I couldn't make this stuff up. This is too evil to make up.
Well, Joan, you've attended so many of these World Economic Forum conferences, and you've reviewed a lot of what's in this report, the secure world, the collective security, what do you think we can expect to come out of the five-year follow-up to the Millennium Summit with everything that's going on?
Well, just like this report, the UN basically already has a rapid deployment force, but it recommends a rapid deployment force.
Mm-hmm.
It's recommending the Security Council be enlarged, which all the other previous reports have, but this time they want the Security Council to have the power to enforce sanctions over countries. They want member states to provide additional troops to be on call for disbursement to the UN at any time. They want to give the UN the legal mechanism to enforce international criminal court statutes.
You know, if I could just interject something right before
the legal mechanism?
Yeah, about the legal mechanisms in Johannesburg at
World Summit.
I attended that environmental law conference, and one of the correspondence that came out before the EnviroLaw, it said that the fatal flaw in the whole globalization process until now has been to discover how they could translate their policies and treaties into operational laws that could be implemented and enforced. So it's all about assessing, monitoring, and controlling and enforcement, and they kept stating that they were down to enforcement. And then things become violent, and they become really oppressive. So
you're seeing what I have maintained as I have covered global meetings for the last 10 years, that they have the foundational structure. They have all of the committees. They have all of the agenda items, if you will. The whole structure of world government's in place. It's not coming. You know, the IMF World Bank is the economic along with the trade. You have the political with the UN. You have the legal with the International Criminal Court. You have, with regard to 9/11, you now have the military and the Secret Service now working lockstep, all of, you know, MI6 in Britain, the KGB, you know, the CIA, and all the others are now working in lockstep to find the, you know, faceless terrorists.
Global sharing of resources and information.
Mm-hmm. And now what you have here with this report to the UN is you now see the enforcement. The teeth are coming.
Uh-huh.
Okay. The teeth are coming. The International Criminal Court, hey, that was major. I was at the birthing of the International Criminal Court in Rome in 1998. If you don't think that was scary to see this thing that could transcend national sovereignty to arrest an alleged international criminal and call him off or her to The Hague to be tried, not by a jury, but by not by a jury, but by judges.
Mm.
You know, and that again goes
specialist.
Back to the British form of law.
Mm.
So I see here that again, they've come so far, and like you say, with the Brahimi report, with Homeland Security, they've done already so many of these things. They have all these things in the works, and it's gone through so many different commissions that it's now at the UN level. It's no longer just some commission. It's now at the UN level where they're going to, you know, expand the Security Council. They're going to add members.
To dilute our... You know, I have a theory on this, Joan. It's obviously going to dilute our influence at the United Nations, but I think in this whole process, we're so far down the road in destroying the United States economy that they're going to have to pick up other countries now to finance what's being done at the United Nations, because the United States pays for nearly half of the normal day-to-day operating budget of the United Nations at this time, and two-thirds of all the special operations. And once the destruction of our economy is complete, they're going to need new lackeys to pay for that, however that's going to be done.
It'll be very interesting, Joan, because you see what's happening at the same time all of this is happening is the rise of the public-private partnership, mm-hmm. which, again, is corporations buying out government.
Mm-hmm.
And they're taking on responsibilities that governments only did before. And so what that means is that you and I have entered into a new feudalism because our taxes are no longer paying for the services that government used to provide.
Right.
And so we're not only being taxed for not having any services, and, you know, the rise of everybody and their brother calling for money, you know, the police, the retired police, the international police, the firefighters, the this, the that. I mean, you know, they don't have the funding. Every level of government is broke. And so, you know, we do have some serious things that we need to really understand. Who are they going to get to take over? Well, Joan, I mean, let's go into a store and try and buy something that's not from China. And I think that in and of itself is scary.
Right.
Having gone to all these meetings to see the rise of China and to watch them jockey into very key positions, I mean, you know, they held sway and they were responsible in part for the Cancun WTO meeting coming to a stalemate. You know, because they organized other third world countries. And so China was invited last year to the G8 meeting for the first time. They had, the year before, I believe. And then they were invited to the IMF World Bank recently. Where were they? No, the G7. Okay, I'll get it. The point is that we're seeing China pop up all over the place. They are now the industrialized center of the world.
Another successful experiment of the Rockefeller Brothers Fund.
Yeah. Now, let me give you a rosy thought. I was on a radio show probably 9 or 10 years ago, and I was talking about General MacArthur and how he was one of my favorite generals. And some guy called up. He was military, served under MacArthur. And I'll tell you what, he gave me a piece of his mind, and he said, you really like that guy. And he said, let me tell you about that man. When he went to Japan, what he did was he set up a private corporation. And as Japanese companies were applying to be able to do business in their own country after the war, they had to go through, business had to be done through his private corporation so he'd get an override of all the business that was being generated. Mm-hmm. I thought, my goodness. And then I thought, oh, wait a minute, what do you think happened to Nixon when Nixon and Kissinger went to China?
Well, and of course, Brent Scowcroft is the United States representative for this UN report that we're talking about.
Right.
And Scowcroft actually went to work after having been in the national security advisor to Ford and Bush. He was vice chairman of Kissinger Associates, and then used his influence and his experience to help corporate leaders get into these global joint venture opportunities. So,
wait a minute. He was vice president of Kissinger Associates?
Yes, he was from 1982 to 1989.
Let me tell you about Kissinger Associates. Wolfensohn, Jim Wolfensohn, who became president of the World Bank.
Yes.
Okay. Back when Robert McNamara was forcing third world countries to do financial plans and to take loans of huge amounts of money from the World Bank to do all kinds of projects that became white elephants, Jim Wolfensohn was one of the contractors. So when he became president of the World Bank, Henry Kissinger, Kissinger's and Associates, bought his company, Wolfensohn. See, it's just all, you know, very incestuous here.
Joan, you know, this can get to be so overwhelming for listeners. What can the average American do? I haven't researched this, but I understand that there's a movement to pull the United States out of the United Nations? How do people combat this? What do they do?
That's a good question, and having been doing this for 10 years, I should have some answers, shouldn't I? I think what Michael is doing in Santa Cruz is absolutely wonderful. I think we all have to get involved in the process. And I remember sitting in one of the UN meetings, I don't remember which one, and they basically made the statement, everyone will have to get involved in the community. And it's really the community. We have to get involved where we live. We have to go to these meetings. You know, while we're at home taking care of our family, these people are busy going to the PTA, the county council, the Board of Education, and all the other, and the zoning boards, okay?
Right.
We're going to all those meetings, and you and I don't know a thing, and you know, you have members from all of these non-NGOs, you know, the Nature Conservancy, the Audubon, the you know, ad nauseum. Who do you think is at these meetings telling our leaders what you and I want?
Right.
Okay, that's how it happened. You know, we've been dumbed down. Why do you think I report? ABC, NBC, CBS, the Wall Street Journal won't tell you what people have learned in this hour.
Right.
Okay? And I made a commitment to God that I would cover as many global meetings as I could. I never, ever, ever expected 65. Never. Am I a little tired? Yes. Do I get down? Absolutely. I get darn depressed. Had to hold my breath for a moment. I get depressed. I mean, you know, it is overwhelming. This is spiritual warfare. And now, as a guest, I think I can say this, and I'm not trying to be religious. It is spiritual warfare. And, you know, I think we have to go back to what the good old book says in Second Chronicles. If my people, who are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear their prayer and heal their land. Our land is sick. Maybe we better look at our immorality. Maybe we better look at what we think is important personally. And maybe we better start asking God to help us. This is not a battle that you and I can wage on our own. This is something way above our power, because we are fighting powers and principalities of very huge magnitudes. I mean, they've perverted Genesis 1, 2, and 3. I mean, that's where we go. I mean, they have made themselves gods, and they've taken the God who created heaven and earth and made him an amoeba. Excuse me. You know?
Right.
So I just think that, you know, we need to be, the Bible calls it wise as serpents and harmless as doves.
Right.
I still have yet to understand what that means, but, you know, we really need to, knowledge is power. Whether you're building a business, whether you're vying for a scholarship for college, you know, whatever the case may be, knowledge is power. And we cannot overcome, and we cannot go against the agenda unless we understand what we're talking about. And before, you know, before I go to any of these meetings, I read tons of documents so that when I go there, I'm as sharp as a tack. And I can lobby questions that go right between the eyeballs of these big boys and really make them accountable. You want to play a game? Then let's play a game that you're accountable to me, and I'm a reporter. All right? I mean, you know, hey.
Right. And you do. I've been here. I've watched you. And you ask the questions that nobody else will ask. And you're respected for it because you understand what's going on because you've invested so much into it. And there's no reason that anybody else can't invest.
That's right. It all takes a sacrifice. You want to be a reporter? Give me a call, 301-371-0541. You pay your own way. You go there, okay? You can do it. And you don't have to go overseas. You can go in your local community. You find a newspaper that will give you press credentials or a radio station or whatever. You tell them, hey, baby, I'm free. And you can do exactly what I've done. Be a reporter. Be a reporter.
That's great. And in the process, you become educated and you can push back.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely.
Well, I guess we probably should wrap it up. I know it's so late back there, and
I know you feel very guilty.
Really? Yeah, I feel guilty. but I just appreciate you spending the time with us tonight. This is Joan Vian that's been our guest, and this is the third interview that Joan has done in, what, a week or two? And people can contact Freedom21SantaCruz .net and get copies of the tapes. And I'd certainly contact Joan Vian for her information, because it really is foundational. There is no one with her background and experience that has put together as much information that she has. It's been a fascinating 2 hours. I just appreciate the insights that you've given to our listeners, Joan. And if you could give your phone number, your website, one more time.
I want to thank Michael and Freedom 21 for inviting me, and thank you, Joan. God bless you. I just love you and your family, your kids. Just so great. My phone number, 301-371-0541. You know, we're talking about our country here. We're not talking about a bag of chips. We're not talking about a dress or a suit. We are talking about our country. And once it's lost, it's gone, baby. It is gone. And we'll never get it back.
And that is so, so overwhelming when you consider the price that was paid, the blood that was shed, and could it ever be gotten back again once it is over the brink? And I don't think so, because this is the third time, and the big boys have said, we have got it right this time. And with the technology and with the resources that are at their disposal, creating this international economic order, we really need to be engaged in this battle, and we need to be engaged now. Joan Vian, God bless you. Thank you for being with us, and we look forward to hearing from you again. This is Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio. Thank you for tuning in and being with us this evening. We hope this has been informational for you. Good night, and tune in next week.
Have you purchased or invested in gold and silver coins or bullion in the last several years? If so, you've most likely been taken advantage of. In a lot of cases, out and out lied to. There are several tricks of the trade in play in the precious metals and collector coin markets. This is especially true during a hot market. Although it doesn't take a savvy investor to avoid the pitfalls of unscrupulous coin and...